good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world. And thank you for joining us right here on Eagle FM. Of course, your number one talk radio station. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Reader News Analysis, your trusted source and trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and impact developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, On The Reader News Analysis isn't just about headlines. It's about meaningful engagement, asking the tough questions, connecting the dots, and revisiting past stories with fresh context. From major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Our interviews go beyond soundbites. They are long-form, in-depth conversations grounded in facts, expert analysis, and the voices of our listeners. Every discussion aims to uncover what truly lies beneath the issues shaping our country. Now remember, you can follow On The Reader News Analysis live across Eagle FM's national radio frequencies via our online streaming and also the Eagle FM website. Pardon me, Eagle FM website and online Eagle FM app. Don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, highlights, and exclusive clips. So stay with us, tune in, and step beyond the surface. This is On The Reader News Analysis, where Namibia comes to think and interrogate. Now getting into our discussion today, the 2025 Namibia-European Union Partnership Dialogue that took place yesterday on 1st September 2025 at the Namibia Institute of Public Administration and Management was co-chaired by Selma Ashipala Musavi, Minister of International Relations and Trade, and Anna Beatrice Martens, Ambassador of the European Union to Namibia. Now the dialogue brought about discussions that covered a wide range of issues, including Namibia-EU economic and development cooperation, the state of play of the Memorandum of Understanding, Roadmap, Implementation of the Strategic Partnership on Green Hydrogen, and the Critical Raw Materials Value Chain, Multilateralism, Women, Peace and Security, and the Pact for the Future, Climate Change and the Environment, as well as the EU's Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. Now, the dialogue once again underscored the European Union's central role in Namibia's economy as the country's largest export market and one of its most significant trading partners. Now, as an independent study on trade and foreign direct investment FDI flows between the EU and Namibia, conducted by economist Robin Sherborne, author of The Guide to the Namibian Economy, was released by the EU delegation to Namibia on 12 February 2025. It was commissioned by the delegation. The study offers fresh insights into the evolving economic relationship between the two parties. Trade is the livelihood of small economies like Namibia, providing access to larger markets and enabling growth through exports. For Namibia, the European Union has emerged as a vital partner, its largest and most diversified export market for the past 3 years. Now, it points out the European Union as a unified partner, stating that the EU, comprising 27 member states, operates as a single trade bloc. This means Namibia is not just trading with France or Germany, but with the European Union as a cohesive market, giving the partnership unmatched scale and stability. Now, since 2024, the EU has been a cornerstone of Namibia's export economy. In 2023, seven countries, Belgium, Spain, the Netherlands, France, Italy, Germany, and Portugal absorbed 95% of Namibia's EU exports, reflecting the depth of this relationship. Now, Sherborne's findings confirm that Namibia consistently enjoys a trade surplus, with the EU exporting significantly more than its imports. The EU's role as a unified trading bloc is a crucial factor in shaping Namibia's trade partners, making it a cornerstone of the country's external trade relationships. Now, Namibia's exports remain concentrated with the European Union, South Africa, Botswana, and China ranking as key market. Diamonds, uranium, and gold dominate Namibia's export basket. In 2023, of course, 95% of Namibia's export to the EU were direct to just seven countries, Belgium, Spain, the Netherlands, France, Italy, Germany, and Portugal. Among the wide range of products exported to the European Union are refined copper, diamonds, uranium, hake, table grapes, charcoal, marble, Leatherhead. And the study further underscores the strong footprint of European Union companies in Namibia, with investments spanning agriculture and fishing, mining, oil and gas, manufacturing, renewable energy and green hydrogen, hospitality and tourism. While the EU remains a key investor, Sherborn notes that further analysis is required to fully understand long-term foreign direct investment trends and opportunities for deeper collaboration. Now, the report concludes that European Union Namibia partnership remains vital to the Namibian economy, diversification and long-term development goals, with both partners prioritizing sustainable growth, new opportunities are emerging in trade, investment and green energy cooperation. The findings highlights not only the strength of the existing partnership, but also the potential for it to evolve in ways that directly support Namibia's ambitions for economic transformation, Sherborn observed. Now, of course, we're going to reach out to a trade analyst as we discuss this further. Stay tuned as I call them up.
Great news! Indo just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Indo? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. And now we engage Mr. Elijah Shaushini. He's going to pronounce it better than I am. He's the manager for prices and foreign trade statistics at the Namibia Statistics Agency. Good afternoon, Mr. Elijah, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. Good afternoon to your listeners as well.
Okay. And Mr. Elijah, just pronounce your surname for me, because I was struggling. I was making sure that I get it right.
I think you got it right, okay. But let me just clarify it. It's Shaushini.
Okay. Yeah. Now, of course, we're talking about the relationship, a trade relationship between Namibia and the European Union. Just exactly how significant, and of course, I know it's very significant to Namibia's economy, but can you get right into it, Mr. Elijah?
Yeah, thank you so much once again for inviting me, so that I can clear this significant milestone. Yeah, trade agreements, irrespective of between what country and what country, they are always significant. They are always significant because they open so many opportunities that would not have been there. For instance, without a trade agreement between countries, it means that those countries are trading, but they are trading on the terms of the WTO. And trading on those terms is, I would say, quite expensive, because the standards and the terms of the WTO, they are at universal level and they are quite high. I'll give you an example. If you are trading under WTO, you may end up paying a tariff of maybe 50% or 45% there. But whereas when you have an agreement with another country, the terms are between the two trading partners. So they may decide to eliminate the tariff altogether or to lower it to such an extent where it's beneficial to both countries. So in this context of the Namibia-EU trade agreement, I will even put it like this. It's not actually a Namibia EU agreement.
Okay.
It's rather a SADC EU agreement. And that's because Namibia falls within that SACU and also SADC. Then by virtue of that, it also becomes a member of that agreement. But then of Namibia now, has an opportunity on its own to trade directly with the EU. So this agreement is very significant because we are able to export our products duty-free into the EU. We are able to export our products tariff-free to the EU. They enter the EU at very low tariff. And there are also other opportunities that we are getting by this because trading under this agreement allows us, you know, to access that market that we would not have otherwise accessed. So it's like we are given a privilege. Mm-hmm. We are also given, it's like you are discounted. You are not treated like any other country when you are looking at this agreement. Yes. Yeah. So products, they enter there without a hassle. Yeah, so if I can put it like that.
Which is very good, hey? Now, of course, in 2023, 95% of Namibian exports to the EU were directed to just 7 countries. And of those, among them, items of such as refined copper, diamonds, uranium, hay, table grapes, charcoal, marble, leather hides. Are there specific materials also that have been recently added to the list that Namibia exports to the EU?
Not quite. I think we still maintain that list, because by virtue of our country, you realize that Namibia is quite rich in minerals, and those are the ones that we are sending to the EU. We are also, producing grapes. And if I may just share a little bit on grapes, you will find that Namibia exports a lot of grapes to the EU. The reason why that is because of the seasonality that is giving us an advantage, because Namibia has an advantage over many countries. We actually harvest our grapes 2 to 3 weeks before anyone else does. Yeah, so during that time, grapes are on demand, so we are able to send our grapes already to the EU before any other country, you know, is able to send. So by the time ours are in the EU market, other countries, maybe that's when they are preparing or that's when they are starting to harvest. So that time difference gives us an advantage. So we are also rich in fish, and that's the main commodity that we export to the EU in terms of the food items. You find that Namibia also, I think we also have a little bit of an advantage there because our fish is tend to have high protein and is basically preferred to other fish around. So we export this fish mostly to countries like Spain and Italy, yeah, and those other countries like Norway. They also depend on us for fish. And then, of course, you have the diamond, you have different minerals like the metals and the other metal ores. Then when you look at the import side, we also do import several items from the EU, and this is basically commodities that are already finished. You look at commodities such as your pharmaceutical products, machineries in their different kinds, vehicles, as well as fuel, as much as we have discovered our own oil here, but it's still at a very infancy stage. We have not yet even started pumping this from the ground, so we still depend on other countries for fuel. And fuel is heavily used in industries. Without fuel, you will not have an industry. You will not have trucks ferrying goods from point A to point B. You will not have the vessels that are catching the fish doing what they are doing right now. The mines will not be functioning without fuel. So we do depend on the EU also for that supply of fuel.
Now, Mr. Elijah, one of the hallmarks of the relationship between Namibia and the EU is consistent trade surplus with the EU. Kindly just explain that for us.
Come again with your question.
the consistent trade surplus that Namibia enjoys between the EU and, of course, between Namibia and the EU. I just want you to explain what that actually means by trade surplus. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. You see, when you look at trade, there are two flows. You have your exports, which is a flow of products from your domestic country to a foreign country.
Okay.
And then you also have your imports, which is a flow of products from a foreign country to your domestic country. Now, at the end of the day, when you are calculating your trade surplus, you are actually subtracting your imports from your exports. And then you get your net export. And this net export, if it is positive, then it is termed to be a trade surplus. It means you are receiving more than you are giving, per se. Mm. And then if it's the other way around, if it's a negative, then you have a deficit, which is a bad part, per se. So Namibia has recorded a consistent trade surplus with the EU. That means we are actually exporting more products to the EU than the EU is importing from us. So what that literally means is that when you have a trade surplus, it means you have enough money to cover for the imports that you wish to buy or that you have bought. So you are not borrowing to buy your imports.
Very clear. Yeah. Thank you so much. Now, in terms of the European Union exporting from us, pardon me, importing from us, not really that way around, but for us actually exporting from the other side, such as mining, manufacturing equipment that we need to use over here, how is that? Is that something that is often, or just also get into that?
Yeah, I think it's something that is often, like, it happens on a monthly basis. Because, like I mentioned, for example, fuel. You see the significance of fuel in almost all the industries, that they need it on a daily basis to continue with their operation. So that's why we import it on a monthly basis. Even other machineries, it applies, because machineries, they wear and tear. New industries are coming up and they need new machineries there. Some machineries are breaking up and those machineries, they have to be bought again. And some, when they break, maybe they only want parts. These parts, because we don't manufacture those machineries, we need to import them. So it's a cycle that keeps on, turning, because you cannot say, I have imported this machine and I will be with it for maybe 10 years without the machine, you know, being maintained, without the machine, you know, wanting to be replaced. So it's something that is constant. We are ever importing this. And also, once we are importing this, we do not only import this for the domestic market also. You have to look at this as a business strategy for other, you know, entrepreneurs that are out there. Because what they do, they can be importing the same machinery. They import them from EU. They bring those machineries into Namibia. And when those machineries come into Namibia, they are kept in a place called the bonded warehouse. Okay. So a bonded warehouse, within a bonded warehouse, this product can be cleared for domestic consumption here in Namibia, or otherwise they can be re-exported to other SADC countries like Zambia, Botswana, you know, Zimbabwe, DRC, where they are also needed. So you look at it as a business strategy to say, okay, Namibia is a logistics hub. We have a harbor here, and it's easier to bring machineries here in Namibia. And once they are here, your clients who are in Zambia, Botswana, they can access those machineries here in Namibia, and it will be quick, very easy to ship them from Namibia than when someone is knocking on your doorstep to say, I need a certain machinery. You have to tell them, no, I need to import that from the EU. So if you already have them here in Namibia, It's just a matter of distributing that to that country.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the EU has given Namibia 750 million meant for industrialization. Now, why is it this very important between two companies or two entities in terms of a trade relationship?
Yeah. If we go back to the title of this trade agreement, it's called an EPA. EPA, it means Economic Partnership Agreement. So under this Economic Partnership Agreement, you are not only looking at the trade component of things, you are also looking at, you know, economic development.
Mm.
And that's where these funds come into play to say, okay, as much as we are doing trade with you, we are buying products from you, you are also buying from us, but because we are, you know, a developed country compared to you, then we can help you in order for you to develop your country or to develop your economy. So this is one of the areas where the EU have identified that we need help. So they give us this fund so that we can establish, we can develop, and we can strengthen this industry. And not to say that they are not looking for any benefit. There are benefit because the more industry we have here, the easier they are going to get products from that industry because we already have that trade agreement with. So some of the surpluses that will be coming from those industries, they will eventually end up in the EU shelf.
I see. Now, why is it also, how can Namibia now perhaps incorporate this for other trade partners that we have in order for those, for that relationship to be strengthened? Of course, I think at this point I will exclude also the U.S., considering earlier this year what transpired in regards to trade relationships of the U.S. with many other countries. And with that, what you're explaining also opens up my mind to now understand why Namibia was not crying and moaning. And maybe pardon me for lack of better word, such as South Africa in terms of a relationship sort of like fallout because of the tariffs imposed by the U.S. Could you also just get into that for us?
Yeah, I think why Namibia is supposed to be forging for this relationship with other countries, it's because of the development component that I mentioned, because in most trade agreements, like the one that you mentioned now, the AGOA. AGOA is an agreement between the U.S. and mostly sub-Saharan countries. And when you look at this trade agreement, it's also, to an extent, not really beneficial to the U.S. because it's not a reciprocal kind of thing. You see, when you are looking at the EPA trade agreement, the one that we are just talking about now, there is reciprocity here. It means that the conditions I give you, you also give me certain conditions. So it's more of a 50-50, if I can put it that way. But when you are looking at the US AGOA, this agreement is only looking at the African countries that can export their products into the EU market free of tariff. Whereas if the US export the same product or any other product to these African countries, there is full duty that is paid on those products. So you see that there is a bit of unfairness there. So that's why you see the US came and said, okay, this agreement is not benefiting us at all. So we are going also to increase tariff of the products that are coming from these countries into the U.S. And those tariffs, they were increased subject to how much you are trading with the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more you trade with them, the less you pay taxes, but the more of your goods go in the U.S. and the more money you get. Because, like I said, when you don't pay tariffs, it's like you are discounted. So your products end up in the U.S. And then they are whatsoever they are spent, the citizens of the U.S. spend their money there. Meanwhile, the implication of that is that it's developing the Namibian, you know, industry. and then that Namibian industry that is exporting to the U.S., you know, it will keep on expanding. It will increase jobs and so on and so on. Meanwhile, the U.S. is not getting anything out of that apart from the goods that go there. So that's why there was that outcry. However, I think with this sort of agreement, I think it's just a matter of maybe sitting around the table and discuss to say, okay, since the EU, the US also wants more benefit from this agreement, how can we make it a reciprocal kind of agreement other than a one-sided, you know, kind of trade agreement? So in that, that's what should actually happen.
Very interesting. I'm lost for words. Thank you so much, Sir. I really do appreciate the insights that you have shared with us here. And in terms also, of the, fallout, of course, of the relationship with the U.S., for some of us and for other countries, I think we saw it as, sort of like an opposing to us, not actually bringing in light or trying to understand where the U.S. is actually coming from. But thank you so much for making time for us, Mr. Elijah Sausini.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. And there we had it from Elijah Sausini. He is a trade analyst at the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now we pause right here, but we'll be back shortly to engage furthermore on this topic. Stay tuned. This is On the Radar News Analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Buy 2 times Rhodes 1 liter 100% fruit juice for only $49.99. 2 times 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $139.99 with Smart Buy. 400 ml Vaseline Body Cream or Lotion for $44.99. And 2 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $54.99 with Smart Buy. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and now we're joined in studio by our own very journalist, Dwight Links. Good afternoon, Dwight, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
How are you doing, Happy, and good afternoon to the listeners.
Obviously, I'm doing well, thank you.
First, you know, a little bit early this afternoon, but Now,
Dwight, you attended the Namibia-European Union Partnership Dialogue that took place yesterday.
Yeah.
So much was discussed, and of course, so much was brought to the surface again. The dialogue, of course, exposing that Namibia still maintains a very good relationship with the European Union,
yeah,
with it being Namibia's first...
Well, let me rather say one of Namibia's largest states.
Yeah, partners. Largest. Okay, cool. Yeah. Now get right into it. Thank you so much. Yeah.
If we look at things from a trade scenario, even the recent analysis that the NSA did, and I think Mr. Sausini would have highlighted that, would have been that Europe technically didn't feature as much for both import and export. That's now recently.
Okay.
It does not say that we don't trade.
Yeah.
I have to cite last year when the Belgian King came here to Namibia. Remember when they went to Walvis Bay for the unveiling of the hydrogen facility at Walvis Bay?
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
The Belgian King, Philippe.
Okay.
When he came here. At that stage, you know, what was it? It wasn't the EU representatives here. It was actually the Belgian representatives because they flew from South Africa here to us. Obviously, to welcome
the Belgian king,
the king himself, and then all these statistics started featuring up, you know, there in the discussions happening, and I remember Helmut and I, we also analyzed that particular engagement because At that stage, I think, when we, you know, when our colleague Justicia was still here with us, she was also focusing heavily on that particular visit and what was happening there at Walvis Bay. And then we literally went through the trade data and that's just Belgium. And then we went like, so in the past 2 years, that's not from 2024 to 2023 to 2022, Namibia and Belgium had been trading a lot.
Ooh.
But it had been predominantly Namibian money going to Belgium for Belgium hardware coming to Namibia. So that means one specific sector was sort of like amplifying the trade between Namibia and Belgium directly.
Mm.
If you went probably Namibia and Germany, I'd say there's a lot of trade activity between Namibia and Germany, you know, in comparison to someone like Belgium. France also features as a specific trade partner with Namibia. Then there's obviously also the aspect of the fishing resources that you have Portugal and Spain playing a significant role in Namibian Namibian trade relations with countries from the EU bloc. You then extrapolate things further and you take a country that is not in the EU anymore, that being the UK, which Namibia also has trade relations with.
Yeah.
So when you think about the EU, you sometimes have to think about EU minus the Scandinavian countries. So I'm talking about minus Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland, and the EU minus the UK. Because obviously the engagement that happened yesterday was labeled as a partnership dialogue between EU and Namibia. And at that occasion, we had actually three ministers present. We had two ministers present.
Well, apart from
It was Minister Ashipala Musavi from International Relations and Trade, and Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. That being Minister Daniel. So the aspect obviously saw two ministers welcoming, you know, various
delegates.
Well, not delegates. I want to use the proper word, man. Ambassadors and consulates and representatives from consuls in Southern Africa, because the Lithuanian ambassador was there yesterday and we don't have a Lithuanian embassy in Namibia. Now, certain countries that don't have like direct bilateral relations with Namibia, they work through the EU embassy here in Namibia.
I hear you.
And we vice versa in that scenario, because the Lithuanian ambassador was based in Pretoria.
Okay.
So to also the Irish embassy representative, we don't have direct Irish relations. So they also sent someone to be present here with us. Same to also for the Polish ambassador that was there yesterday as well. Because we also don't have direct Polish, direct relations with Warsaw, in terms of, you know, vis-a-vis. So we had to work through obviously the UN embassy.
Yeah.
The other guys that were directly there, Germany, France, was the UK flag there? No, there was no UK flag. So it's Germany, France, Spain was there, Portugal was there, Italy was not there, surprisingly, because I know Italy is in its own right trying to help with renewable energy development projects in Southern Africa, but they're predominantly working in South Africa and not in Namibia. So it's also a question of how they expand. And then there is, there was another country there, which just slipped the tip of my, you know, the tip of my mind. But yeah, so when you had to look at the scenario there in terms of trade, you have to look at the direct relations that Namibia also has.
Yeah.
So now I take you to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
The opposite end of the spectrum is, I started with Belgium. The trade relations with Belgium is that we've got a ambassador to the UN, to the EU, based in Brussels in Belgium. That ambassador has to be our sort of like connecting or representative for the Benelux countries. The Benelux countries is Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. So you can then understand that we had one ambassador going one direction. We've got an ambassador in Germany. We've got an ambassador that is responsible for, I think, France and Italy together. I'm just not sure if we've got an ambassador to Spain and Portugal individually. We've obviously got someone, a mission in London. We obviously don't have a mission in Ireland, just to let you know, because probably they would have to work through the Benelux, the EU ambassador based in Brussels. So you can also see the direct relations. Oh yeah, Finland. Sorry, Finland. That was the country I forgot.
Okay.
Finland, obviously one of Namibia's,
good relationship also.
I put it like best friends without trade, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can cite in a Spanish, in a Portuguese, in a French, and in a German scenario, you can cite trade. Namibia's relationship is not just friendly, but it also involves trade.
Mm.
Now, Minister Ashipala Musavi has cited in last Friday's diplomatic briefing that the engagement there is based upon that Namibia's bilateral relations has to be to the benefit of Namibians, and it has to result in economic benefits.
Yeah.
So if you go and analyze Namibia's relationship with many countries in the world, if you come to countries like South America, where you go and ask a question of, for example, like Venezuela, and I'm sorry, guys, Venezuela and Cuba, you can understand, obviously, that is born from, it's the same relationship that we've got with Finland that you find with those two countries.
Mm, I see.
Which is one of, like, you know, we are friends, you know?
But no trade relations.
No trade relations, because you have to find the common ground in terms of what would we want from your economy, and what do you want from our economy?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's ultimately...
Are we maybe not just exploring enough?
I think we are, but exploration obviously is based upon, you know, the aspect of, do you have money to, you know, to try and set up missions? That's why some countries have consuls with us, like... on Friday, with that diplomatic briefing, as the minister and one of the executive directors, that being executive director Pendananda, asked, you know, everyone to introduce themselves, because there were obviously changes.
Yeah.
Since the start of this year up to Friday.
Yeah.
And then everyone just introduced themselves. The ambassador of Venezuela is a new person. The ambassador of, was it the U.S.? Because this was only the charge d'affaires of the U.S. that was present. I don't know, but the ambassador to France was not present. Only the charge d'affaires was present.
Mm-hmm.
The charge d'affaires is like the person second in command or second in charge of the embassy, you know, like in rank systems. There was another person that also just sent a charge d'affaires. In between, changes have happened. Obviously, also on our side, we've had ministers, being introduced since 21 March. So that was the first time that the minister technically met the diplomatic community in Namibia. Right next to her, like sort of like adjacent to her right, the outgoing Egyptian ambassador.
Outgoing.
Because he's also, I think, he left this week, or probably end of September. So a new ambassador from Egypt would obviously come.
Yeah.
If you have to ask your particular question, if we now narrow things down, what is our relationships with Egypt as well?
Mm.
Because we have to take things further. I mean, we trade probably more with Angola than with Egypt.
Okay.
I mean, it's just natural. You first trade with your neighbors, then look for guys way over there. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, starting points. Yes, Europe would be one of Namibia's biggest trade partners, but I think the EU ambassador, Martens, she cited that yesterday, that the EU bloc itself is one of Namibia's biggest trade partners.
Mm. And actually, it's actually a bloc. We're not talking about one country, but we're talking about a bloc of countries.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when you had to look at like the last trade statistics that the NSA themselves released back in last week, based upon, I think this was like once again, their 3 month periods, because it ended at June 2025. The analysis there, and I actually just want to show you the percentage layout in terms of Namibia exports and Namibia imports. So what Namibia had in terms of export markets, the top five export markets that Namibia saw for June 2025 was, China was Namibia's largest by 25.2%.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa was the second largest by 20.4%. Then you had Botswana, then you had Zambia, and lo and behold, you had the US as the lowest, the smallest, but in the top five. The opposite spectrum, which is Namibia's top five import markets, was once again South Africa at 39.2%, China at 12.5%. That's import markets.
Yeah.
Oman at 5.2%, DRC at 3.2%, and the United States at 3.2%. So, in essence, even if you look at most recent data scenarios, the EU is probably in like a small, would be there in a small breakup percentage somewhere. But just in that scenario, as of June 2025, you know, probably it shows, indicates, you know, things are still happening. We still have to analyze every further. And then we have to see what it looks like at the end of this year.
Exactly, hey? Nonetheless, South Africa continues to be Namibia's primary source of imports, hey?
You can ask that question.
But it has been revealed that reliance on South Africa for imports has steadily decreased since 2004. Now, I know we are diversifying in terms of EU, China, India, and UAE, but where are the perhaps can we explore, Dwight, in terms of imports?
If it comes to imports, so you're technically asking a question of import replacement, the discussion of import replacement. So what people don't know about is actually what many, even some of our callers have had in terms of our engagements that we've had with many of our listeners and stakeholders. The subject matter is known as import replacement.
Okay.
So import replacement is literally what Donald Trump is busy trying to do. Donald Trump wants, he doesn't want to import a finished car from China. He wants that car, that whole process, to be based in the US. And all his economists have told him that is impossible because, firstly, American labor costs are one of the highest just in the American zone, the North America, Central, and South American zone.
Yeah.
Because you're paying people in US dollars. And secondly, some of the other affiliated industries like the tire production industry, or let's say the steel making or the smelting or the other processing aspects around, you know, what goes into a car.
Yeah.
Some of those things have been exported out of the US because they realized that certain things were way too expensive to try and do in the US. So the US actually is responsible for much of its own particular problems, but I'm just citing you what Donald Trump is now trying to do, because many people are fixated on the front of what he's doing, the tariff discussion.
Yeah.
But you have to look at the message associated to the tariff discussion. He wants to bring things back to the US.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Namibia can pull something off like that.
Okay.
We can. The downside is, Happy, you've got to ask yourself is, where do we start? Do you want to bring in a factory that makes a car, but then you realize that you've only got 500,000 Namibians that actually have jobs, and they already have brand loyalty to certain particular car products and car brands.
Yeah.
And if you bring in something that they don't align with, meaning you don't do market research, how sure are you that you will be a success? Because it's all good and well if we speak the gospel, meaning let's get there, but you don't actually go and look at what is the path that you've got to walk. If you don't know the path that you're going to walk, all this noise that you're going to be making, all this hot air that you can blow, will just stay hot air. And everyone will tell you, well, unfortunately, Dwight, you want to build a factory, but the only, let's say, the only smelting complex which is based in Tsumeb, unfortunately, they have to, let's for example say they have to invest certain particular components to smelt or to process or to refine certain particular metals.
That's still going to be expensive.
That obviously means a cost will be transmitted somewhere. So how are you going to mitigate that cost? If you show up with a robust plan by saying let's build our own thing from scratch, from a company idea, overall market, vision and mission, sure, then I'll say go for it. Because that's what the Iranians have to do. I didn't know that Iran has its own two car companies. They make their own cars because of the sanctions, obviously, that they struggle with. They make their own cars. But if you now ask me, are they environmentally friendly? I don't know, because Iran is an oil producer.
Yeah.
So they have the input. They obviously make their own item that uses the input, and they generated their own double economy. Now we sit with a different scenario. If you ask me, Dwight, where do you think we can get a hit? Well, if we develop the soft industries. Soft industries is like clothing, shoes, let's say your coffee, your tomato sauces and all those other things in between. Yeah. You know, the agro processing, which NDP6
is trying to target.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the question has been, you know, who takes those reins and then leads us to the promised land.
That's true. Hey, those are questions. I think those are discussions that we ought to be talking about.
We should first make those things.
Because I think we have been speaking about value addition, and that's wonderful that we're now looking at that. Now, hypothetically speaking, come next year and maybe around this time towards the end of the year, and things are really rising up or booming up, you know, that value addition, a lot of Namibians, especially now with the loan money at a very low rate that they are getting, the youth development fund, and we have all those people that now have wonderful products with value addition added to it. I mean, we talk about Mahangu pasta just the other day, but which markets are we looking at to penetrate, and who actually should be looking for us?
I will always put the market scenario at the one thing that we need to know about is how many people are there that have a salary in Namibia? The downside is happy. There is so much data that we don't collect in Namibia that we need to start collecting, because in South Africa, they can break down every month to you what South Africans need, what South Africans have been doing, how South Africans feel about certain particular price increases, what this translates to. Obviously, our own authority itself, they are trying. I slightly sympathize with them, because you have a massive ministry like Ministry of Home Affairs that collects immigration, births, deaths, marriages, divorces, sizes of households, meaning children born to, you know, to two parents.
Mm-hmm.
Those particular metrics need to outline to you specifically, if you're a market planner.
Yeah.
How many Namibians are there going to be in 2030? And how many Namibians are unfortunately, you know, either being born or either, you know, pass away in the meantime?
You're speaking of something that Minister Emma Teofilis spoke the other day. He says we need to have systems that can speak to each other.
Yeah, she's so sure. So what she's citing is data interoperability.
What you call it?
Data interoperability.
Okay.
So data interoperability is a discussion of, you're a ministry and I'm a ministry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You collect data. Let's, for example, say you are agriculture and I am environment.
Okay.
You collect data on, let's say, rainfall. And I'm in charge of Namibia's climate change commitments to the Conference of Parties at the UN.
Okay.
Because I'm Minister of Environment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I also need to collect the same data. But if my data differs from your data, let's say my data collects the rise, the height, the, what you call it, the water levels in rivers, which is natural. And you are Minister of Agriculture, but you only measure water levels in dams, which are man-made structures.
Yeah.
Then obviously our data points will differ.
Of course.
Now, we are both measuring rainfall, so that would obviously be the same, because we cite it from the same agency known as the Meteorological Department.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside here would be, I go count rivers, which are freshwater sources. You only go count dams, which are also freshwater sources. But I account as Minister of Environment for aquifers and rivers. So below surface water and surface water. And then in both scenarios, we probably sit with overlapping mm-hmm. policies, mm-hmm. and which has been proven by an analysis done by the Auditor General's office themselves. That led probably, you know, that's obviously prior to the new minister coming in, that being the minister before, Minister Zamwani, before he stepped in specifically. I don't want to cite that. but just in that scenario, obviously, that the report was then introduced in National Assembly, stating that Ministry of Agriculture probably is potentially working in a silo. because they have to be aligned with other particular policies that come from other ministries or sister ministries. So data interoperability, 100%. Policy alignment, 100%. And the second scenario is also the one thing that we saw at the start of this year, specifically with the merger of these ministries into, I think it's two or three super ministries.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. MESAC, obviously being education.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one being obviously the mergers to international relations with the trade component and to mines and energy with the industry component. Yeah. However, there is a crucial thing that needs to, that binds those two ministries. The consumer market. Who looks after the consumer market? Because mines and energy will go and say, yeah, we will drive all industry and potentially we will not be cognizant of environmental controls or agricultural controls or what level. So industry also forms part of the aspect in terms of the thing that we just now said, trade replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
That is also essential there. So yeah, in a nutshell, it's many particular things that we have to achieve.
Actually, hey.
Yeah.
Many particular things we have to achieve through discussions as well.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
Yeah. Dwight, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Not a problem.
Okay. Now, of course, you can also be part of the news analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
Application deadline for the new short courses being offered by the Vavutsia University has been now extended to the 5th of September 2025. And they are as follow: Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law, Programs, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution, Admission Requirements, Agree to Senior Certificate or Equivalent and QF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years of relevant industry experience is required. Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation, admission requirements, grade 2 of senior certificate or equivalent and QF level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or grade 11 certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Now, course cost is only $5,500 Namibian dollars. Fees can be paid in 3 months installment. And of course, the application deadline is the 5th of September, 2025. Vavutsia University, where everyone is an achiever.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And now we take you to news beyond the borders, but before we cross over to that page, let's just give you what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators. Now, US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 73 cents, while £1 sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 72 cents. €1 equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 62 cents, and one Australian dollar is 11 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. One Botswana pula, on the other hand, is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 32 cents. One Kenyan shilling is 0.4 Namibian dollars. And now for some trading economics. Industrial production in Portugal rose by 2.3% year-on-year in July 2025, following an upwardly revised 3% increase in the prior month. Now, this marked the third consecutive month of modest growth in industrial activity, supported by energy at 16.1% versus 20% in June. Capital goods at 3% versus 1.6%, and immediate goods at 2.5% versus minus 0.4%. However, production declined for consumer goods, excluding the energy group. The index decreased by 0.1%, down from 0.5% in the previous month. Now, on a monthly basis, industrial output shrank by 1.5% in July after a revised 3.7% decline in the preceding month. Urals crude has been trading between $61 and $65 per barrel since August, compared with a $65 to $69 for Brent, narrowing the discount to its smallest since the war in Ukraine began in 2022. China remains the largest buyer of Russian crude, while Russia has continued to serve as India's top supplier. In response to India's purchase, US President Trump launched a pressure campaign, arguing that cutting imports would push Moscow to end the conflict. And with that being said, let's pause right here. When we do return from this commercial break, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Stay tuned.
Get your monthly essential products for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 kilogram each of Sugar King white sugar, Top Score Super Maize meal, and Buck Pro Fed Cook flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King, as well as 500 grams Pasta King pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save. I save. Yes, we all save. You save.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa as the M20 summit is still ongoing, and the regional director for Media Institute of Southern Africa speaks in regards to journalism not being a crime.
In Johannesburg, it's running alongside the G20 summit and focused on the role of the media, the importance of reliable information, and how to strengthen journalism. The discussions also unpack ways of building trust in news. For more, let's bring in SABC News reporter Khayelitle Khumalo, who's been watching developments there since the gathering started. And Khayelitle, there's going to be a focus today on safeguarding journalists, especially those, of course, who are reporting in volatile environments.
Well, that's right. And in fact, currently, one of the major talking points is to be around the safety of journalists. In fact, one of the renowned journalists from Zimbabwe, Hopewell Chinone, is currently speaking to the delegates about the precarious conditions that he's facing. And in fact, when you talk about the working conditions in the continent, when you talk about the issues of censorship, the lack of freedom of expression are some of the major issues here, Ayanda. But also, during the course of the day, of course, we're expecting that declaration that will be adopted by M20 Summit. So the goal is for that particular declaration to go to the G20 leaders so that they really create conducive environment for journalists to operate in their countries, but also not just peculiar to the G20 countries, even beyond the G20 countries. But just to reflect on the significance of today, as we are edging close to the last day, we're joined here by Dr. Thabani Moyo from MISA, all the way from Zimbabwe. Dr. Moyo, let's talk about the issue of the safety of journalists. I mean, quite very, very startling revelations inside about the conditions that the journalists are finding themselves in certain parts of the continent. Let's talk about the Zimbabwean experience, for example.
Thank you very much. Yeah, journalism is one of the forerunners in terms of the crimes that are now being recorded across the continent. As you rightfully know, that we have said journalism is not a crime. It is purely a profession where you are criminalized for doing what you're supposed to be doing. In the case of Zimbabwe, just like another African country, is a mixed bag of attacks, the use of lawfare to target journalists, the issue of mobilizing different constituencies of society, including political parties, to lynch on the journalists when they are doing their work. Surprisingly, we are in the 13th year of the UN Action Plan on Safety and Security of Journalists, and not a single country has adopted that framework. That goes for location of the perpetrators of the crimes, arresting them and holding them to account, or to mitigate. What we call for then for is to say, African countries should bring this UN Action Plan of Action closer home by domesticating it. We have seen cases even worse off in countries like Mozambique, where there is strife in the north with Cabo Delgado, where journalists are shot at while they're doing work. We have seen journalists in 2020 in Mozambique, like Mburako Ibrahim, who has gone missing since 2020. Nothing has happened. And our call for action is to say, not a single story is worth dying for. One journalist, an attack is too many in a continent that requires information to make informed decisions. And this is critical. If you look at Botswana's, the issue of the Directorate of Security, raiding on newspapers. We have a case in Lesotho recently with the editor who is actually behind bars for simply uncovering corruption. And to us, we say one journalist too many to be targeted for telling the story of Africa.
Dr. Moyo, platforms like M20, what can they do in terms of making sure that journalists are able to ply their trade unconditionally without any impediments whatsoever?
This is a critical platform which builds on solidarity nets. As you can see, it is coming up with a declaration which is aimed to galvanize the entire progressive thinking community to say we focus on power. If the G20 is moving here, how can we petition our cause that journalists have got the right to exist? It's for the benefit of society to make informed decisions, that we daily struggle to take the story to their jurisdiction. And our cause as the media is to say society is better off when it is examined. And our role daily is no agenda save of examining society for the whole of Africa to be a better place to live for, to live on and to live about. Because Africa to us is the business of the day. It's where we stay. It's where we want to see better. And to us, we say, when we are moving to these platforms organized by SANEF and Media Monitoring Africa, this is a key area where we are saying for one in a long time, we are speaking with a collective voice to say, let hands off the media for a society that is informed. Structure the media in a way that is responsive to the changing conditions of society. Technology should be responsive to the changes of society, but it must be held accountable so that we build a better community predicated on our values of Ubuntu. We are a community, we are a collective, and this platform gives us the muscle to speak with one voice to power.
Table Mountain reopens several silver mine trails after fire.
Boardwalks, ablution blocks and other support structures were destroyed or severely damaged, leading to the closure not only for safety due to exposed nails and metal, but also to allow for ecological recovery.
We weren't so worried about the fynbos regenerating because we can, as you can see, we've had lovely rain in winter and the plants have started coming back. All the pioneer species and the geophytes are coming back again. So we have seen that plants are regenerating as well as birds and other small animals that are coming back to the area.
There are over 850 kilometers worth of hiking trails at the Table Mountain National Park. Few are still under rehabilitation work at the moment as a result of the fire, with their reopening expected soon.
We are very happy to be able to welcome all of them back. We know that they've been waiting patiently. People love this area to go for their hikes, their trail running, walking their dogs, mountain biking as well. So we're very happy to welcome them back, and we want to thank them for their patience. But of course, we're still continuing with the work. There are still some trails that are not open yet.
And visitors appreciated the work done to bring the park to its former self.
Definitely. We bring our dog up here a lot, and we actually live in Nordhook, so we watched all those fires. And we also mountain bike, so it's lovely to have all the trails back available for us.
Very excited. We live just on the other side of the mountain, and the day before the fires, we renewed our cards to come up here. And then, like, on the day of the fire, we were all getting ready to come up for a walk. And then we started seeing the smoke, and we were like, oh, maybe we won't go up. And then that was the day that everything burned down. So it's really nice to be back here.
While the area has been declared safe from crime for visitors, they are, however, urged not to walk alone, to strictly follow the signage and instructions from the rangers, and to also keep emergency numbers at hand. Thandiswa Mau, SABC News, Cape Town.
Potato powers transformation in Lesotho's agriculture sector.
It was once just a humble family staple, but today it's become the symbol of national transformation. Lesotho has chosen the potato as its priority crop under the One Country, One Priority Product Initiative at the UN, a bold move towards food security, resilience and agricultural growth.
What motivated Lesotho to engage and participate in the program is that we had already, for a number of years, researched, and through that research, we realized that there is a product that we can grow in Lesotho that can contribute to agricultural growth and agricultural transformation. And that product is the potato.
In Lesotho's resilient mountain regions, home to many vulnerable communities, potatoes thrive. In 2023, 27-year-old Maluta Mahau began farming potatoes in the remote town of Simonkom. Farming is important for young people because it allows us to create our own jobs, earn an income to support ourselves and feed our families. Lesotho's high-altitude climate boosts potato yields, now up 20% in some areas. The goal is not just food security, but reducing Lesotho's reliance on other countries. Currently, we produce about 9,000 tons of potatoes each year, but within the next 2 years, we aim to increase production to 24,000 tons. This will greatly help us reduce our reliance on importing food products and seeds from neighboring countries. In this way, potato farming can help bring back our people who left the country. Through the program, potatoes are empowering local markets, driving income, empowering women, and uplifting rural youth.
Musa Sakara urges inclusion of socio-economic rights in the Bill of Rights that's in Zambia.
Zambia's Constitution, the 1991 Zambia's Constitution, as amended in 2016, is the primary and supreme law of the land where all other laws are derived. The Constitution, among other things, has the Bill of Rights, which currently only has civil and political rights, while the economic, cultural and social rights are not included because the referendum that sought to expand the Bill of Rights failed in 2016. Stakeholders such as the Windows of Hope Foundation say time has come to revisit the need to expand the Bill of Rights to include economic, cultural and social rights through a referendum.
As citizens, we need them. In the first place, it failed because people were not aware exactly of what is the need of the economic, cultural and social rights. Why do we need them? We need them because we need to make sure to say the government is held accountable for not providing certain services. For example, water, schools and employment. So we need these things.
The organization, however, wants the process to be done away from general elections to avoid people voting for the bill on political lines.
If we need to have those economic, cultural and social rights, we need to have it separately where people are focusing only on that issue.
Meanwhile, residents of the tourist capital Livingston believe the inclusion of the social, economic and cultural rights in the Bill of Rights will enhance social services such as access to education and health.
So we really need those to be activated so that at least we are able to access the education rights.
Because many graduates these days, they are not finding their way. So if it now become a law, where if you know you complete university, you are assured you'll find a job.
The Constitution is the supreme law, and therefore adding the economic, social and cultural rights into the Bill of Rights will guarantee their supremacy. Mombeha Mobola, ZNBC News, Livingston.
Meanwhile, health officials in Uganda push for a ban on traditional birth attendance.
We also don't have the calibrated rape, and which we really need in the management of PPH. Then also another challenge is that midwives are inadequate. We have no ambulance and a facility, but at least we can use the one of Chazanga. Then no accommodation for critical staff like doctors, anesthetics, and others.
In Rwengo district, we have had challenges of these traditional bus attendants. And we tried as a district to take them to court. But along the way with the state attorney, it was dropped and we couldn't proceed. We want to request Ministry of Health to initiate a policy on the TBS. Otherwise, it is too political and sometimes it goes beyond our capacity.
We've supported training of midwives at Center 3s and Center 4s. We've supported training of doctors in surgical skills. And amongst the regions in this country, this has been the first to train health workers in anesthesia skills. And so we've seen that this impacts care so that we can reduce mortality and morbidity. We would like to have a call to action. So for us, we pledge and commit to work with the Minister of Health, with leadership, and the entire structure that have been laid out. And through this, there's a lot of efforts, and there's no one who can claim that you do it single-handed.
We must transform our people economically. Secondly, our people must go to school, understand and read, and get qualified in some skills. Number four, we must improve the quality of our health facilities.
Burkina Faso passes law criminalizing homosexuality.
Burkina Faso's ruling military junta has passed a law criminalizing homosexuality and making it punishable with up to 5 years in prison. Foreigners convicted under the new law will be deported. The bill directed at what it called perpetrators of homosexual practices was passed unanimously by the transitional parliament's 71 unelected members. It's part of broader reforms regarding family and citizenship legislation. Homosexuality is banned in about 30 other African nations. Burkina Faso's neighbour and close ally Mali, which is also ruled by a military junta, passed a similar law in November. There's been growing opposition to LGBTQ plus rights in Uganda and Ghana, both of which have tightened anti-gay legislation in recent years. In Uganda, so-called aggravated homosexuality can be punishable by death, while engaging in same-sex relations can carry a life sentence. Since taking power in a 2022 coup, Burkina Faso's military leaders have launched sweeping reforms, including postponing elections that were expected to restore civilian rule.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir fires three ministers and governor.
Where we are going to Sudan, and in Sudan we're going to be focusing on what's unfolding there with regards to the Sudanese President Salva Kiir having fired three ministers and a governor in his latest cabinet reshuffle. No reasons have been given for the dismissals. The nation became the world's newest country in 2011 after ceding from Sudan, but has been engulfed by civil war after Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar fell out. And to discuss this further, we are joined on the line by political analyst Dr. David Matsanga. Dr. Matsanga, good afternoon and thank you for joining us on Africa Update.
Good afternoon, my sister. Good afternoon, Africa, and good afternoon, the entire world. Thank you very much. And we thank God for bringing us here again to talk about Africa.
Dr. Matsanga, is there anything untoward regarding these dismissals? What are the reasons behind it? Nothing has been spoken of.
Since independence, some of us helped a lot to get South Sudan independence. You remember the wars that took place between the Lord's Resistance Army and the government of Uganda, SPLA, and the government of Khartoum, until we hammered the peace agreement in Uganda, in Juba. I was part of that negotiating team that brought about the removal of warring parties out of South Sudan, and South Sudan got independence. But since that time, South Sudan has remained a fragile state, a state where people kill each other. You remember the first president of South Sudan died in a helicopter crash, and then Mr. Salva Kiir took over power. No sooner had they taken over power than in 3 months, a war broke out. And then in 3 years, a war broke out. They split. Dr. Riek Machar, a very good guy who does peace, who helped us to hammer peace in Uganda, fought against, and they all clashed. And South Sudan has been at the brink of disaster from disaster and disaster. It is not a country you can talk about.
Mm. Now, of those that have been named as the replacements, are they from Kiir's party? And if so, could it mean that the president is looking at changing the landscape of the cabinet?
The president himself is part and parcel of the problem. And another thing that I want to say is IGAD is to blame. The peace negotiators that went out to hammer the peace agreement of South Sudan erred. You cannot in life ever hammer a peace agreement without accountability. Accountability is key to any redemption strategy for a country to come and have peace. That was not done. That failed. The peace negotiators failed South Sudan. Since this agreement of coming together, Riek Machar and Salva Kiir was hammered, there has never been harmony. They all walk with pistols ready to kill each other. Salva Kiir is a grown-up guy who I know very well. Riek Machar, an educated man whom I know very well. Why do they always want to kill each other? Ethnicity has been rampant, rife. Even this selection is based off on ethnicity.
And now we move on to news beyond the borders. A Sudan landslide kills hundreds, the UN says.
Now let's take you to Sudan, and a landslide in the western region of Darfur has reportedly buried a village of more than 1,000 people. Well, that village is located in the Mara Mountains in the Darfur region. The country's appealed to the United Nations to help with rescue efforts. A local armed group which controls the area, the Sudan Liberation Movement, says it needs help from the international community. It's released these stills from the area. Well, the UN's Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in Sudan says the response to the deadly landslide is being hampered by bad weather and poor infrastructure. Well, let's go straight to our senior East Africa reporter, Akisa Wandera, who's been monitoring developments from Nairobi. Akisa, distressing images there and quite a high death toll so far. Just tell us more about what you're hearing.
Well, details remain very scanty on what really is happening at the mountainous region of the Mara, but we know that days of rain, as you say, have buried an entire villages with the local rebel group, the Sudanese Liberation Movement, or army, putting the death toll at over 1,000. Just about under an hour ago, the army-led Sovereignty Council has sent its condolence messages, not really giving a specific figure of the death toll and the casualties really in that area, but saying that they mourn with the hundreds of people who have been killed in this particular landslide. So we're still trying to follow up on information. The organizations that we've reached out to in parts of Sudan are still trying to verify the numbers and what really is going on. You would appreciate that it's a remote area, so getting information and even access for many of this organization has become very difficult.
Indeed. Okay, so who are the Sudan Liberation Movement Army?
Well, this is a group that currently controls part of Darfur. It was formed almost 25 years ago in 2002 and was one of the key factions that rose up against the rule of Omar al-Bashir. But it has since disintegrated or split in various factions, one of which said this year that they will be supporting or fighting alongside the army as the conflict between the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces continues. So this is a region that has been led by rebel groups, so to speak, for more than 20 years now, a very remote area, very mountainous and very difficult to access. And we understand that recently the conflict between the army and the Sudanese RSF have led hundreds, if not thousands, of people to seek refuge in the Mara village. So then you would appreciate that this particular devastating landslide would then mean that a lot of people who are already displaced by the war have been affected as we speak.
Lisa, just very briefly.
More than 800 people have been killed after a strong earthquake has hit Afghanistan.
To Afghanistan now, where rescuers are struggling to reach villages in remote mountainous areas after a powerful earthquake. The United Nations says at least 800 people have been killed and entire villages have been destroyed. An estimated 2,000 people have been injured, according to the UN's humanitarian agency. The number of casualties is expected to rise. Well, some casualties have been airlifted to safety. The Taliban is appealing for urgent help from international aid organizations. Our correspondent Yogita Lamai has traveled to the epicenter of the quake and just sent this report.
In treacherous terrain where cars and diggers can't reach, they use their bare hands to pull out the dead and injured. In the middle of the night, while people slept, the quake struck. Their mud homes collapsed over them. This part of the eastern Kunar province, home to tiny hamlets, too difficult to reach even at the best of times. Now many are completely flattened. It'll take days before we know the full scale of the disaster. I survived with an injury to my head, but you can see a lot of people have been killed here. The whole village has been destroyed, says Wazir Khan.
That's a helicopter that has just taken off to go to one of the earthquake-affected areas to try to get the dead and injured out of there. Just while we've been at this airport, we've seen multiple helicopters going off and coming back and carrying the injured back. I've seen a lot of women among the injured, but they're not allowing us to film the women, and so you'll only be able to see the men and the children in our pictures. But this really has been a crucial lifeline today because the affected areas, you can't really access them by road.
The injured brought to the only major hospital in the city, already overstretched even before the disaster, now pushed into chaos. A doctor searches for a bed for the child in his arms. There is none. Every inch of space is being used. The child is 3-year-old Nasibullah. His twin sister and his younger brother died in the earthquake. His father, Mir Zaman, says he pulled his dead children out of the rubble himself.
It was dark. There was no light. Someone lent me a lamp, and then I used a shovel and a pickaxe to dig them out. There was no one to help because everyone was affected. So many people died in my village. Some are still buried. Whole families have died.
For a country already reeling under a crisis of hunger and a severe drought, this disaster is another cruel blow. Yogita Lamai, BBC News, Jalalabad.
Well, we can talk about this now to Peter Galbraith, who's the former US diplomat and former Deputy United Nations Envoy to Afghanistan and author, academic and policy advisor. Peter Galbraith, thank you so much for being with us. The Taliban are appealing for international aid. Do you think much is going to be coming to Afghanistan from the rest of the world?
Yeah, I think the first point that one has to say is what a tragedy for a country that has far more than its share of tragedies. I don't expect a big inflow of aid. It certainly won't come from the United States, where Donald Trump has eliminated the U.S. Agency for International Development, the principal agency in the U.S. government to provide disaster assistance. It won't be coming significantly from the United Nations, in part because the United States is cutting its funding for the United Nations, even pulling back on its assessed contributions, the ones it's obligated to pay. The Taliban are not very popular anyplace. I think the question is, what is the scale of the disaster? In my experience, the numbers in a situation like this start out small and become quite large. So far we have 800 dead. But that number will certainly increase. Will it be 8,000? I don't know. Obviously, I hope not. But we don't know the scale of it. The Taliban government has very limited resources to deal with it. It has limited health care, limited medical personnel, limited medicines.
Now, as you've heard there, more than 800 people have been killed in Afghanistan and nearly 3,000 injured after a 6.0 magnitude earthquake struck eastern Afghanistan just before midnight on Sunday. The United Nations Humanitarian Agency has said most of the deaths occurred in Kunar province. Officials said, warning that the death toll may rise significantly as entire villages have been destroyed. The disaster comes as Afghanistan reels from a severe drought, aid cuts, and what the World Food Program describes as an unprecedented hunger crisis. Now, this has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onko Nanadengi program brought to you by Matthias Sangara. And from Indafa Apijuju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.